I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Dr. Julie Heath. Julie is the director of the Economics Center at the University of Cincinnati. And prior to coming to University of Cincinnati, you were the director of the Economics Center at the University of Memphis. And you have done some really remarkable things in terms of financial education. Let's talk about your passion for financial education and why you think that's so critical.
While I was at Memphis, I was conducting teacher professional development workshops for K through 12 teachers, and part of that was showing them how to teach financial education as part of their regular curriculum. It just seemed that the teachers in Memphis were very, very hungry for material that would help them make their students more financially literate. I started thinking what's good for Memphis is good for the state. And so I went to the state legislature in Tennessee and pitched a pilot program called Smart Tennessee that would train K-8 teachers on how to infuse economic and financial literacy into their classrooms. Just at that time, it was 2006. At the same time, the Tennessee legislature mandated one semester course for high school graduation in personal finance. So we backed off and focused on K-8.
In Ohio, for example, we have a similar legislation. If I recall, they give you 5 or 6 terms that they require be taught, but there's really no meat on those bones, are there?
There's very little meat. I'm with you on that. The SB 311 requires 6 weeks of economic and financial education embedded, this is for high school students, embedded in a required course. There's a couple problems with that. One is 6 weeks for both economic and financial education is way, way too few weeks. You just can't cover very much material in that amount of time. The other problem is that when you embed it in another course and you're leaving it up to districts as to how to specifically implement that, you get stuff all across the board. So one district might implement it in government. Another district might implement it in American history, and another district might implement it in health and wellness. It really comes down to that basic of foundation. We need to start teaching children about how you make choices and trade-offs and costs and benefits of things when they're in kindergarten. And that way they start thinking in those terms and they start thinking critically. And so then when you overlay money decisions around that, they already know how to think through problems. We're just giving them problems around how do you handle your money. When we teach children how you make good choices, that permeates through all aspects of their lives. So financial education isn't just about teaching kids how to manage money wisely, although that's a laudable goal. Mm-hmm. It's about a way to live your life and a way to critically think through whatever it is that life is throwing at you.
And you know, as you mentioned, if you can do this early enough where these attitudes can really be altered or shaped, I mean, that's a powerful thing.
It's a life-changing thing.
So what should parents listening today or folks who might want further information about this? Because as you mentioned, this is not currently uniformly being taught in our public schools or even our private schools. What should they do?
Teaching your children the concept of opportunity cost is one of the most powerful things you can give them. Opportunity cost is if you choose A instead of B, you know, just being able to think through what is it that you're giving up. When you take your children grocery shopping with you, which one are we picking, this one or this one? And thinking through, now if we get this one, that means we're not getting this one, and are we okay with that decision? Mm-hmm. So just modeling for children how you think through a decision like that.
You have resources online. What is the website there?
It's economicscenter.org.
I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Dr. Julie Heath. Julie is the director of the Economics Center at the University of Cincinnati, and the Economics Center has been wonderful in terms of helping teachers teach children this. Unfortunately, teachers don't learn financial education in school. In order for them to teach our children, they have to be taught some of those fundamentals of finance. How does the center teach teachers?
We actually take a two-pronged approach because you're exactly right. Sometimes when we ask teachers to take financial literacy content back to the classroom, there's a big sense of misgiving. We try to train teachers by making them comfortable with the material, first and foremost. There is really no convincing them that their students need to have this material. I think that's pretty self-evident. But we try to increase their comfort level with even talking about this. Sometimes people just aren't comfortable talking about money. And so they need to feel at ease that, yes, they are competent to do this. And so we give them some tools to do that in addition to giving them the actual content, the pedagogy to take back to their classroom.
And you say we, this is the Economics Center. You actually have courses, training, very specific for this type of thing.
We do. What we're moving toward at the Economics Center is, instead of treating economics and financial literacy as standalone, kind of in isolation sorts of content, we're working very hard to help teachers infuse economics and financial education into the Common Core. So we can teach teachers to take a children's trade book, for example, if you give a mouse a cookie, and go through that and pull out the economic and financial literacy concepts. We can teach them how to infuse it in math. So they can do what they're going to do anyway to meet the new Common Core standards, but they can have, with just one more step, is what I tell teachers, just take one more step, mm-hmm. and you've covered economic and financial education as well.
So if parents listening today would like to learn more how to get their teachers involved, engaged, should they just contact the Economics Center? How do they know what to do next?
They can contact the Economics Center. They can go to our website, economicscenter.org. They can go to their schools and say, hey, I know there's this community resource out there. You know, are you teacher, are you principal aware of this? And we would encourage you to take advantage of the resources that are out there.
And how are you teaching my children about financial education?
Right.
I mean, I think as a parent, that's a legitimate question for me to ask.
Parents ask their children's teachers all the time, you know, so how are you doing with the math and how are you doing with the reading? Put it on the list. How are you doing with economics and financial literacy?
It just seems like a no-brainer. Again, if folks want information about the Economics Center, the website is?
economicscenter.org.
Dr. Julie Heath, thank you so much for being my guest, and thank you for listening to Business Wise. This is Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Todd Colquitt. Todd is the business advocate with the Common Sense Initiative for the state of Ohio. And maybe you can describe what the Common Sense Initiative is and why it's important to businesses in the state of Ohio.
The Common Sense Initiative Office is an office that was created at the beginning of the Kasich administration, and it's overseen by Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor. And our office answers to her. And what our office does in the Common Sense Initiative reviews the state agencies, boards, and commissions as they're proposing rules to make sure that there's a proper balance between the time and effort and money that these proposed regulations will require of businesses with the public interest that those regulations are intended to advance. And we also function as an ombudsman for businesses that may be having some difficulty with state agencies.
Todd, a lot of people don't necessarily think that someone in government is either a business advocate or has common sense, but I know you've accomplished a lot, and everybody's not quite as cynical as me. What are some of the things that you have accomplished so far with the Common Sense Initiative?
Let me give you a couple examples. One was a business-specific issue where there was a business that found out that it had mistakenly paid $65,000 in sales tax, more than what it was required to, and it learned about the mistake when it started bouncing checks. And the company's CPA contacted the state and, you know, was told that they could get a refund in about 6 months. And obviously, if they've already started bouncing checks, that's a problem, and certainly they would much rather have that $65,000 back in their cash flow. Our office contacted the Department of Taxation, and we were able to get them to expedite the refund so that the company wouldn't be bouncing checks and could get that money back into its business as it should have been. So that's an example of for a specific type of company or a specific issue that we were able to help out with.
Part of the reason why I'm so passionate about the Common Sense Initiative is just what you said. This initiative really does help businesses, especially smaller businesses, to cut through the red tape.
Yeah, and that's certainly one of the more rewarding aspects of this job, is being able to have something concrete that you can help a small business with and help them contribute to the broader Ohio economy.
So maybe you can share how, if a business would like to learn more and actually be informed of any rule that could potentially impact them, how do they go about doing that?
There are a number of ways. I think the best way to be involved is to go to the Ohio Business Gateway. You click on a link there that says regulatory reform. It'll carry you to a page that will allow you as a business to sign up for what's called e-notification, and lets you sign up to receive email alerts when an agency that is of particular interest to your specific business is considering rule changes. then you can decide whether or not it's something that you want to be involved with on a going forward basis. Also, on the CSI homepage, we have a link that shows the rules that we're currently reviewing and gives the ability for the user to link through that page to actually view the rules and the associated documents that the agency has provided to us.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Todd Colquitt. Todd is a business advocate with the Common Sense Initiative with the state of Ohio. And Todd, maybe you can just tell people who don't know real briefly what Common Sense Initiative is accomplishing.
The Common Sense Initiative was created at the beginning of the Kasich administration and is overseen by Lieutenant Governor Mary Taylor. We oversee the proposed rules that agencies and boards and commissions come out with to make sure that they've got a proper balance between the adverse business impact and the public interest they're intended to advance. One of the things that we're at right now is we've reviewed about 1,155 rules that are currently in our shop that we're looking at. It's a lot, but it's actually down from where it had been.
Do you think the various departments and agencies are just making sure that when they put forth a new rule or regulation that there really is in the best interest of the state and businesses?
I do think the state agencies and boards and commissions do take the CSI process and the fact that we review these rules seriously and are kind of factoring that in with respect to making the decision on moving forward with putting additional rules out.
Todd, do you have an example of one or two rules that you've changed or modified to make things easier without having a negative impact on really the public interest?
There was one board who wanted to do a fee increase, and when we asked them, you know, what the purpose of the fee was and why the increase was needed, the response we got back from them was that the fees and the fee increase were existed to basically fund the board. And that's not a good enough reason. No, it's not. It's not at all. By and large, we've seen a good cooperation from the state boards and agencies, though. But that's an example of the types of things that doesn't pass muster with our office, and we ask them to go back and reject it or ask them to come up with a better answer.
Well, I think it's a great thing if you can streamline some of these rules that are just unnecessary. But do you think this process will continue beyond the Kasich administration?
Yes. One of the most important things from my perspective about our office is that it was created under law and is something that will exist beyond the current Kasich administration. It's something that all future governors are required to maintain, regardless of party affiliation. So this office and the oversight that we provide over state agencies' rulemaking is something that will exist well into the future.
If businesses out there listening have an issue, if there is a rule or a regulation that you think is unnecessary that's harming or actually constraining your business growth, please reach out. Call the state. Call Todd. He's the business advocate for the Common Sense Initiative. You can certainly contact me. And then we can see whether or not it makes sense to get rid or actually revise the rule. Correct, Todd?
Absolutely, Crystal. I mean, there may be times when we can't help or are unable to provide assistance. You know, we can't fix anything that we don't know about. And so for us, key to have businesses participate and reach out to us. Certainly we'll do everything we can to try and get rid of some of the red tape and let businesses grow in a more vigorous manner.
Maybe you can let folks know quickly what your contact information is or the website.
They should go to www.governor.ohio.gov/CSI. We're also on Twitter and on Facebook. Our email is csiohio@governor.ohio.gov.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guest today is Dave Hatter. Dave is the president of Libertas, which is a customized software applications program company. You help businesses design customized softwares, and Dave is a result of that, I'm sure you see all kinds of mistakes, all kinds of issues and challenges that businesses are facing. Maybe we can talk about the top three things, the top three biggest mistakes people are making right now that could really jeopardize them and expose them.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there, Crystal, because people are using these devices to take information outside of the protected corporate environment and do things that people wouldn't have even conceived of maybe as little as 4 or 5 years ago. So probably the first thing is businesses should step back and say, even though there can be great ROI on this, what are the risks of losing this information, having information compromised that could potentially put you out of business, get you in court, et cetera, and at least determine some kind of policy and weigh the ROI versus the risks, as opposed to just kind of let stuff happen without any real thought to it. I would say probably the next thing is then, if you are going to take any kind of information outside of the more protected corporate environment into the real world on smartphones, tablets, or any kind of device that could be lost or relatively easily compromised, because a lot of these devices, when they were created, security was not at the forefront. And now you're seeing people say, wait a minute, there's a major problem. And you have people bringing their own devices where you don't really know what they've got on it or what they're doing with it. So besides a policy, it's ensuring there are at least basic security measures taken, like the device has a password on it. Many of these devices will allow encryption where you can scramble the data up and make sure that you have to have the appropriate key to unlock it. So even if it is lost or compromised somehow, the data is not just flying around and open and easy for anyone to have access to. And then I would say the third piece, or probably the third next best thing you need to think about, is if you really are going to have highly sensitive information, if you're in some kind of highly regulated industry, you should probably look at, if you have the device secured, when the device is being used out in public, what's the best, most secure channels for exchanging information between that device and your servers back in your corporate environment? Things like a VPN, virtual private network, which allows you to encrypt the communication channel. If you go into a place like Panera or wherever and you get on their public Wi-Fi, it's possible for people to not only access your device, but steal any information. A VPN would make that very, very difficult to do.
Now, is this something that, again, I'm not a technology guru like you are, Dave.
You're better off.
So, but is this something your company helps? There are organizations out there who will come into businesses and help them take a look at where they stand today and try to better their security efforts.
We don't do it as a service directly. I mean, if we're going to work with a company to build some kind of custom application, we'd make sure that security is thought about and built into the solution. And we could potentially help someone who has high-level questions about what they ought to be doing. But in terms of, I have this and you should use this product and that kind of thing, we don't really do that. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of other good companies in the Cincinnati mm-hmm. area, though, who will be happy to come talk to you about that. It's important to educate people on these risks so that they can protect themselves and their clients as more and more mobile devices come into play and people do all kinds of cool, interesting things with them.
Let's talk about, maybe you can share from your perspective where you think some of the things you think are coming down the pike.
One of the things that mobile devices make possible are push notifications and allowing you to say, I'm interested in X, and through geolocation, and we've actually recently worked on something, a thing called Morvi, that works like this. You as a retailer can say, I want to offer deals, and you pay a subscription fee. And then as a user of the tool, which is free, iPhone, Android device, you can say, okay, I'm looking for deals on X, Y, or Z. And then when you get near these places, it says, oh, here's a deal on this thing.
If people would like to reach you, your website is?
www.libertastechnologies.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Brad Cunningham. Brad's a partner with Orange Financial. And Brad, I know that you have a very interesting background. You did not start out in the financial advisory business. You're actually a teacher by trade. Maybe you can briefly describe what prompted you and moved you into the financial world.
I was a school teacher. I taught fifth grade down in South Florida. What prompted myself to get into the financial services arena was as a result of some poor guidance that was provided to my family and I about 11 years ago that derailed our own financial stability and prompted us to start asking questions of what was really going on.
I assume as a result of that, you learned how to manage your cash flow, but how about everybody else? Do you think just in general, Americans are doing a good job of managing their personal cash flow?
I think it's obvious that as a whole, we're not. And as it relates to my own personal cash flow, it took some time. It didn't happen overnight. Because some of the games in the backwards way that I was managing my own cash flow was something I was doing before as a school teacher. It took me time to figure out a more appropriate way to manage my own cash flow. And essentially what we're trying to do at Orange is educate others on some of the mistakes that we've made and how we have learned from those mistakes and can provide guidance to them. We have a society of people that are uninformed. They don't know what they don't know. And when you can shed some light on how things really work and you can work to increase their competency level, we believe not only will their competency level improve, but their confidence improves. They start to believe that they can manage this stuff more effectively rather than where we see a lot of people are unfortunately in the dark and they really just don't understand how this stuff works.
Well, you say people tend to look at their cash flow in a backwards manner. What do you mean by that?
What we have found, what we have observed, and we've done a lot of research in this area, is we have noticed that when generally the dollar comes into the household, the dollar is first spent. That's driven by a multitude of reasons. You have marketing that does a very sophisticated job of making the want appears of its need. You have the element of instant gratification, and people, they will spend first, and unfortunately they spend more than they actually make, and as a result they will incur debt. And none of them like the debt, and they want to get rid of that debt as quickly as possible. But they fail to do a good job of building up short-term capital and reserves for the next hiccup that comes along the way, and they concentrate solely on reducing the debt. And unfortunately, the debt ends up becoming a vicious black hole that they can't get out of. They reduce it, and a hiccup comes along the way, and it picks right back up.
Well, it's like a vicious cycle, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? It's like a spiraling black hole. They start
it
to
is.
Spend. They increase their debt, incur debt. Now, all of a sudden, they have to spend more to get out of debt. What do they do next?
What we're seeing the majority of Americans are doing when they're concentrating on reducing the debt, they save very little. They also do a poor job of protecting themselves against catastrophic events that could occur and that unfortunately rear their ugly heads whenever they want. They end up staying in a bit of a funk. They really never get out of that mess and continue to struggle with why they can't make their financial situation better.
What do they do to change that? I mean, they still have the debt when they come to you, right?
They do. They still do have the debt. One of the things that we're providing guidance to them on is actually to save before reduce the debt, which mentally it seems backwards to them. They struggle with that concept. But our belief structure is you give of yourself, you get out of scarcity mindset first, you get into more of an abundance mindset. And that could be giving dollars or it could be giving time and volunteering and providing opportunities to help others that are less fortunate than them. And the second component after give then is protect the things that they can't live without, the core stuff that's catastrophic that could occur. Then you save, and you save an appropriate amount to have in short-term reserves to cover those next hiccups.
Like an emergency fund.
Like an emergency fund. We prompt to, in an ideal world, to actually try to have a year's worth of income liquid.
And if folks want to learn more about Orange, what's your website?
GoOrangeFinancial.com.
GoOrangeFinancial.com. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Brad Cunningham. Brad is a partner with Orange Financial. And Brad, you were with us yesterday and we discussed the problem that most people, at least a majority of Americans, have with their personal income, their personal spending. And really that is the problem. They tend to spend before they do anything else. So when they get money in, they spend and then they deal with whatever may be left, which is usually nothing. You have a different philosophy, and maybe you can just summarize what that is about how people should go about things.
The flip side of how we see most people managing their cash flow, and just to reinforce what was talked about yesterday, we find they make a dollar, they spend it, they tend to spend more than they make, they incur debt as a result, they work to accelerate the debt reduction, they save very little. As a country as a whole, our average household savings rate currently sits at 4.4%. The other problem with the save component is we often see that 4.4% usually going to a traditional retirement account, things like a 401k, that are not completely illiquid, but they're restricted assets, so it doesn't help with the short-term capital needs that they have. And we talked about yesterday, the next component, which we tend to do a lousy job of in this country, is protecting ourselves against the catastrophic, and we fail to really give back to others that are less fortunate. So to flip this thing around, what we have learned and what we continue to promote to members of our community is to give back first, not even so much the dollar that needs to be given back or to provide it back to the community, but it could be time that's invested in helping others.
So why do you focus on that? Why is that the first component?
It helps with the mindset associated with the behavior of finance. It is getting out of a scarcity mindset where we see a lot of and hear a lot of woe is me. You know, times are tough and the economy's rough and my salary's frozen or unemployment's high. Get out of that woe is me scarcity mindset and get into more of an abundance mindset to where, you know what, I need to be grateful for the things that I do have. Things could be worse. We unfortunately don't have enough opportunity, I think, in this city to gain perspective on how bad it really could be. You know, we even joke around sometimes of having the ability to go to other parts of the world to see how rough life really could be. The give helps with the abundance mindset. You then protect the things that you can't live without. And it's simple things like medical insurance, auto insurance. You know, if I have a family dependency associated with life insurance and income protection, once I'm well protected, and we use a phrase called bulletproof, we then work to save. And we advocate for trying to save 20% of our gross income. That's a target. that we have. And some people get there quicker than others, but it's a big transition, so it may take years to get to that point.
So, like, put that in a pretty liquid fund?
Initially, it needs to be liquid. We have to build short-term capital reserves to cover for life's unexpected little hiccups. And once we build a what we call minimum threshold in savings, then we can work to start to save those dollars elsewhere into other more traditional investment-type vehicles potentially.
Well, and the reason that you emphasize building up short-term capital, you know, for an emergency fund, if you want to call it that, is everyone has emergencies, right?
Well, they do.
And if they don't have funds, then they just go deeper into debt and probably more expensive debt.
Well, unfortunately, we go right back to the credit cards typically. Every year, it always seems like there's something that comes up. And if we don't have the reserves set aside, we generally stay in that same debt mode. Once we build a level of liquidity with savings, then we work to permanently reduce the debt and so that it doesn't come back. And then with whatever's left, is spent.
So, you know, it sounds so easy. You make it sound so easy, but really it's difficult. But Orange Financial can help people. I mean, that's what you do to help your customers, correct? Your clients.
We do. We're dealing with the underlying issues associated with finance and behavior. I don't think enough of that is being done within the space that I occupy within the financial services arena.
Mm-hmm.
We need to focus more on the underlying issues in the foundation, you know, the benchmark behind what sustains us with finances. And that includes this.
And if folks would like more information about Orange Financial and what we've talked about today, the website is?
GoOrangeFinancial.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. We are delighted to have as our guest today, John Morris Russell. John is the conductor of the Cincinnati Pops and quite the local celebrity. Thank you for being our guest.
Thanks so much.
So let's talk a little bit about you before we start talking about the Pops and the music. How did you arrive here in Cincinnati, John?
Actually, we came here in 1995, came here as associate conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony and the Cincinnati Pops, worked with music director Jesus Lopez Cobos with the symphony, and with, of course, maestro Eric Kunzel of the Pops. And for 11 years, I was the associate conductor, did family concerts, outreach concerts, parks concerts, subscription concerts in the CSO, also the Pops. Had a wonderful time. Both of our kids were born here. For the past 11 years, we moved to Canada, and where I was the music director of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra in Windsor, Ontario. 2 years ago, I got the call to come back home. And last year, September 1, started my very first season as conductor of the Cincinnati Pops.
How are you going to handle the Pops under your leadership? What do you have in store for it?
I've always thought of Cincinnati, the greater Cincinnati area, as being a hotbed of musical activity. Look what's broadcast on WNKU, you know, this incredible panoply of the American musical experience. I like to think of the Ohio River, which, you know, created great business opportunities, brought coal from the Appalachians, it brought cotton from the Deep South. Transportation was so much part of building business here, but it also brought music. From the Appalachians, it brought music of Celtic traditions, of the beginnings of bluegrass, country western. It brought immigrants from Europe and then from the Deep South, along with cotton. The river brought the music of blues and jazz right to these shores. And the river also as a gateway to freedom for thousands upon thousands of enslaved Americans who came across this river seeking freedom in Canada. But they brought with them the music of gospel, the music of the spiritual, and all of these musical styles live here. It's of the earth. It's the essence of what makes us here. And I believe that the Pops reflects all of those American musical traditions.
How did you develop such a love for music?
Well, I was very fortunate to grow up in a community that had a great music program. I grew up outside of Cleveland. In elementary school, Janet Blakely, Mrs. Blakely, in fourth grade, she walked up and down the rows of every classroom in the entire elementary school and pointed to each kid and said, "And what instrument will you play?" And so, you know, had elementary school orchestra, band, and then in high school, you know, did everything from musicals to jazz ensemble, even had a garage band.
So is that why you're such an advocate for music in the schools?
Yeah, and you know, it's not just to create musicians, because frankly, it was the great pedagogue Suniki Suzuki who said, "I do not teach music to create great musicians. Great musicians find their own way. I teach music to create good citizens." And you think about what music means means to a child, to a kid growing up. It teaches you self-discipline. It teaches you teamwork. It teaches you love of beauty. And these are things that are so important in any profession.
Right. And John, if folks would like to learn more about the symphony, the upcoming season starts.
We're going to be starting on September 14, 16 is our Pops opener. It's going to be Ballroom with a Twist. It's going to be the stars from So You Think You Can Dance, American Idol, Cutting a Rug with the Cincinnati Pops.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is John Morris Russell. John is the conductor of the Cincinnati Pops. And John, maybe I'd like to ask you, what's the economic impact of the Pops, the symphony, and really all the arts in economic development in Cincinnati?
Well, there have been many studies about this sort of thing. You know, there's one fact that we always use oftentimes. It's for every dollar that's spent on the arts has an economic impact of anywhere between $5 and $8 in the community. So we think about the Cincinnati Symphony and Pops has a budget of about $42 million. Do the math. I mean, it's everything from, you know, having dinner before a show, having dessert and coffee or drinks afterwards, parking, dry cleaning. Those are all the types of things that we don't really think about, but, you know, create a huge economic impact, especially on our urban core, on downtown.
And not only that, but businesses want to locate where there are great arts and communities because it's an easy way to keep their employees, attract employees to the company.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that quality of life is really important. When we're thinking about a region that's trying to attract really great entrepreneurs, these are the same types of people who are invigorated by the arts, because we know that the arts are able to go, you know, very quickly between the left and right side of the brain. And when we think about the types of creative thinkers, the entrepreneurs, the great workers, the great business leaders are the ones who have that ability to go between the left and right side of the brain, and it's the arts that propel that.
How do the Pops help put Cincinnati in the spotlight for people who aren't in Cincinnati, you know, on a national or even international basis?
Oh, I mean, especially on an international level. Through our recordings, we're just releasing, in fact, the latest Cincinnati Pops disc. It's the 90th recording of the Cincinnati Pops. My first is the conductor. It's called Home for the Holidays. Our discs are heard worldwide. In fact, it was in the early 1990s that there were more Cincinnati Pops discs sold in Taipei, Taiwan, than Michael Jackson. Well, you know, what's really inspiring is our musicians of the Pops, and that's what really jazzes me, to be able to work with these incredible musicians who not only, you know, can play the best of Beethoven and Mahler and Mozart, but then turn around and swing like crazy.
Mm-hmm. It was great. What would you say to maybe someone in Dayton, in Charleston, West Virginia, Huntington, West Virginia? Can they come up and just see the Pops? Where can they learn more about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you go to CincinnatiPops.org, go to the website, you'll find out all sorts of information about our fantastic orchestra with a great recorded legacy, television, our touring. We're going to be in Eastern Kentucky just in a little bit as well.
And as far as the Home for the Holidays, which I love holiday music, how would you go about getting that? Is that on the website too?
You can pre-order them actually on Amazon.com. You can also come down to Music Hall and pick up your own copy there.
When is the opening performance?
September 14 through 16 is the Pops opener, Ballroom with a Twist. The great stars from So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars and American Idol, Cutting a Rug with the Cincinnati Pops.
Sounds wonderful. John Morris Russell, thank you so much for being my guest and for everything you do in our community. And thank you for listening to Business Wise. I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Andrea Brady. Andrea is the president of Empowering Innovations, LLC. She also is 27 years of experience in marketing, strategic planning. She has another company called the Marketing Shop Consultants. And Andrea, what's fascinating to me about your story is that your new company, Empowering Innovations, was really as a result of your daughter Natalie's invention, who she's now 15. So
right.
She kind of founded the Fear Zapper, which is the main product for your company at this point. How old was she?
She was 9 at the time.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a neat story. She came home from school one day, and she and her friends had been scared by some things in Harry Potter. and she wanted to find a way to help herself and her friends overcome that fear. Now, we had worked with her since she was little using techniques which were basically from cognitive behavioral therapy and from positive imagery. And the idea was to help her be proactive about things she would face that she was afraid of. So when she came home scared, she said, I want to take that and I want to turn it into something technology-based, realizing that kids her age are joined at the hip with their technology pieces. And she came up with this idea. And we tested it, and it's worked wonderfully, and it was the jump start of the company.
So now, fast forward, she's 15.
Right.
You have now taking this company. I know you're part of the Innovate for Health Accelerator.
Right.
Let's talk about what your goals are. What's your plans for the company?
Well, we're really hoping that this is the first of many products. Empowering Innovations is dedicated to developing technology solutions that help people lead better and more productive lives. So we're starting with My Fear Zapper, which helps children build self-confidence by teaching them how to face fear and stressful situations. As we work through that product, and hopefully we will see a lot of success with it, we'll be able to take those same concepts and develop them for other situations and hopefully even for adults.
So has Natalie got anything else under her belt that she's thinking of?
Well, right now she's kind of absorbed with school, but actually she has written a book for us. So we are going to publish that book this fall, and she's doing some videos. So she's still somewhat involved.
So you're part of the Innovate for Health.
Yes.
And that's been going on how long?
We're finishing our 10th week out of 12. It's a great program. It's really, we were kind of at the starting place. We had our system, but you know, as you said, my background is marketing and consumer marketing mostly, so didn't have a lot of healthcare experience. So coming into Innovate for Health really gave us some perspective on that market, contacts, information, and it's helped direct us and focus us. And as we come out of the program after 12 weeks, we'll be ready to really start marketing to the healthcare market, as well as look for investment to go to the next level.
Well, Andrea, that sounds fascinating, and I'm so happy for you and happy for Natalie. And you know, the fascinating thing is that if you can teach a child how to overcome a fear, it's not just a childhood issue.
That's
right. Really empowers them for the rest of their life.
That's right. Fear does not end. And, you know, even if it's starting a business, in fact, we had one mother who was looking to start a business. She was afraid to quit her job. Well, she used My Fear Zapper with her son on his fear of the dark. But she came back to me and said, this has actually helped me take the leap.
That's wonderful. And if folks would like more information about My Fear Zapper, the website is
www.myfearzapper.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.